I call the remote meeting of the House Higher Education Committee to order. The CLA will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Howard. Representative Howard. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, present.
Cleborne, present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Crenshaw.
Crenshaw, present.
Crenshaw, present. Representative Mason. Representative Mason. Representative Mecklund.
Mecklund, present.
Mecklund, present. Representative Noor.
Noor, present.
Noor, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. Representative Howard. Representative Mason. Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. Next, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 23rd, 2022?
So moved.
Representative Noor moves approval of the minutes for February 23rd, 2022. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for February 23rd, 2022 are approved. First on the agenda, we have file 3048 from Representative Sandsted. We have 20 minutes scheduled for this bill and we will plan to wrap up around 3:25. I will move that House File 3048 be laid over for possible inclusion. We have before us House File 3048. Representative Sandsted, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, committee members. It's my honor to present House File 3048, a bill to make a $10 million one-time investment at the University of Minnesota's Natural Resource Research Institute, frequently referred to as NRRI. NRRI's mission is to deliver integrated research solutions that value our resources, environment, and economy for a sustainable and resilient future. They have labs in Coleraine, northeast of Grand Rapids, as well as labs in Duluth. Through partnerships and an integrated research model, NRRI creates the information, tools, and technologies to reduce risk and support sound long-term solutions for Minnesota. The investment in this bill has two components. First, the bill would fund an expansion at NRRI's Duluth lab. As NRRI performs larger and more complex research, they need a larger lab space for more flexibility to house state-of-the-art instrumentation and researchers in aquatic ecology, water management, forestry and wildlife studies, and mineral research. The second piece of the bill would fund a new mineral processing and metallurgy building in the Coleraine facility. The current facility was built in the 1930s, and it is difficult to support the capability of newer equipment. A new mineral processing facility would help them engage in industry partners and demonstrate more emerging technology opportunities. When we talk about investments here at the Capitol, it's usually how it will affect our future of the state or a particular community. But the work done at NRRI is truly global in scope, especially as they find solutions for water quality issues, forest health, and 21st century mineral economies. If you've never visited either of the facilities, I would certainly invite you to come up north and take a tour sometime so you can see for yourself the groundbreaking research that they perform firsthand. I strongly urge your support for this bill. And today I have with me two individuals from the university and NRRI. First, I would like to welcome, Vice President for Research, Dr. Michael Oakes.
Welcome to the committee, Vice President Oakes. Please state your name and please proceed.
Sure, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Michael Oakes, and I serve as the Vice President for Research for the University of Minnesota System. It's really an honor and delight to be with you today. I just have a few short remarks. I wanted to support from a university system perspective the bill in front of you and the initiative from the NRRI. The university's research enterprise is highly ranked, top 10 public university. Last year, we took in over $1 billion of research awards from around the world, the federal government and beyond. We're doing more and more impactful research for the state and with the state. We also are key contributors to the state's economy. We're on track once again for 20 startup companies and for many patent disclosures. And of course, this is to say nothing about the educational mission that you all know very well and key to the knowledge industry pipeline. The initiative from NRRI is consistent with President Gabel's strategic plan, MPAC 25. It fits in with my strategic plan for my office, what I call innovation impact. And I would just echo what representative said about a tour of NRI. It's a very special place. So driving the economy, driving scientific research for the local economy and frankly quite beyond is just a really important aspect of our collective work. And I just wanted you to know that I supported, I work with the director, Dr. Weberg, which you hear from now. It's a very important plan, and thank you for your time, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Stanstead, would you like to go on to your next testifier?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Up next, I have Executive Director of NRRI, Dr. Ralph Weberg.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Weberg. Please state your name and please proceed.
Yes, thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the Higher Ed Committee. My name is Ralph Weberg. I'm the Executive Director here at NRRI. It's a real pleasure to be able to speak with you this afternoon in support of House File 3048. I'd like to thank Representative Sandstead for her continued, for her nice introduction and the support she's given us, as well as Vice President Oakes, who's for your comments and sponsorship in this endeavor. So thank you very much. What I'd like to do is continue the conversation with a very, very brief reacquaintance with NRI and the return on investment that we're bringing over this last year, and then go and give you a bit more detail in the background of what we're asking for and how we want to use it and what those outcomes we're expecting to come out of that from. So I promise not to do death by PowerPoint, but I'm going to share my screen, which I hope you see at this point in time.
It's getting there.
Okay. There. Are we?
Yep, it's as a slideshow now. Thanks.
All right, very good. Thank you. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these, but the NRI was created by the legislature for the legislature and placed in the University of Minnesota to promote technology leveraging across the state of Minnesota, consistent with the land grant mission of the university. As Representative Stanstead indicated, delivering integrated research solutions is what we're here to do. If we are successful in achieving that, we really should be helping discover that economy of the future for the state of Minnesota, the region, and the nation. When we talk about, that's all nice, but what do we do? Well, we're delivering on three impact areas. Vice President Oakes talked about innovation impacts. Well, these are the three that we're driving here. Ecosystem resilience, understanding the world we live in, the ecosystems we work in the face of how we use our land and the climate change, and then understanding what we can do to mitigate those impacts to both land and water ecosystems. It's where we start and end. Future forest industries. Model, what are the forests today? What are they going to be 20, 30, 40 years from now? What are those hybrid species that can actually drive a new industry, a new look at reducing carbon footprint for the country and the globe, and developing partnerships for new products, a new future? Iron and minerals of the future. We have a long history of iron and minerals in the state. We need to change our focus and to new products, expand the portfolio, reduce the carbon footprint, and really assume a leadership position. These are the things we're really focused on. So some recent impacts. Here's the return on your investment that you've graciously given us over the years. Sulfate is an issue in the state of Minnesota. We have the most stringent guidelines for wildlife anywhere in the world. The current technology is too expensive, particularly for municipalities to be able to afford. NRI has been busy developing three separate technologies that we are now deploying from the laboratory you see in the picture here in a trailer that we now have three of these going around the state to demonstrate these technologies that have been shown to be low cost, effective, and easy to use. That's the return. Iron of the future, it's a new program we're driving across the whole state. Minnesota Taconite today accesses only 30% of the US steel industry with nowhere else to go. 70% and growing is the electric arc furnace industry. We need to change, not only because our iron resources are changing, but we need to develop those metallic products to be competitive globally. The DOE, US Department of Energy, agreed with that and is helping us leverage state money that you've given us to drive federal investment in this effort. And we're having a large meeting about Minnesota iron and the green economy next week. Lastly, looking at our timber resources, we have a lot of secondary forest species that don't have commercial value. Thermal modification turns a piece of wood into a material with a specified performance property. That's worth money, that's worth jobs, and NRI has adapted this technology to Minnesota products. And Arborwood, which is a new company starting up in Grand Rapids, we are supporting that. That's new jobs. So between managing our environment, introducing new products, and creating jobs, that's our impact for this last year. We want to make sure that you were feeling that conversation. We have these two facilities. We've got the facility in Duluth that Representative Sandstedt indicated. That's the best place to be in our tornado. It was built by the Air Force during the Cold War, and it's now a very active site with a lot of laboratories. The Coleraine site that you see on the right side of the picture is a former U.S. steel site. Lots of opportunity, lots of possibilities, and we'll get to that in a moment. So what are we doing with these facilities? We need some help. If we focus on the first part with the laboratory expansion, the problem we've got is we're out of space. In the upper picture, you see a $500,000 piece of instrumentation that we literally stuck into a closet. The labs in the other picture, in the upper part of the picture, are heavily used and we're out of hood space. Our increasingly complex research demands updated infrastructure. And what we're asking for is new flexible laboratory space that can change with the projects. Projects aren't static. They're always changing. Our challenges are changing. And we have to be able to let these projects change and come in and out of the Institute. The impacts increase our capacity, update these tools, provide students and faculty opportunities in applied research, and keep driving that delivery conversation. It's a place we can engage our collaborators and partners that are now global. And we are looking to deliver the science that brings value to Minnesota. And if you look at the picture of the building, we're talking about the top floor, because in order to go from the bottom floor up, each of these walls is a foot thick of concrete. So going to the fourth floor in the area that you see colored in there, that's what we have initiated an engineering study to see what's possible. Madam Chair, there's a question. Should I take it at this point, or should I just finish the last slide?
I'll have you finish this last slide. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. Last is looking at the Coleraine facility. These buildings, the earliest one was built in 1910. Typically, most of them are on the 1930s era. If you look at the picture, we have snowdrifts coming in this time of year. We have uneven flooring, which is with train tracks and other holes in the floor that we have to work around. And the pieces of equipment that you see in the pictures here are state-of-the-art pieces of equipment we're using to help the current industry reduce energy utilization by up to 30% in the grinding operations and sifting operations. The buildings are placarded with particle board and they're coming apart. This is not the place we can move forward with. We need a new mineral processing metallurgy building. We're not talking about all the innards, as you see in the bottom pictures of what we aspire to. We'll find other funding for that. We need a building that we can start beginning to use, because state and federal investment in the world-unique equipment and capabilities for iron and minerals of the future is coming here, and we need a place to put it. Impacts, enhanced minerals portfolio with reduced carbon footprint, as I said earlier, reduced energy and water consumption, management environmental impacts, and most importantly, getting external funding coming into Minnesota to pay for this. There's the picture of the site. That's where we would put it. So it's essentially another barn like you see over here, but it would be modernized with current safety and operational assets. At that point, I'll say thank you, and I will stop sharing, and I'll be very, very happy to entertain any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We don't have any more testifiers today, I believe. And so, Representative Sanson, I'm going to move to member questions. And I see that Representative Heitzman has his hands up. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Sanson, I always like seeing what's going on at the NRRI campus, and it's great to see this project. I do have questions for you specifically about the funding mechanism that you're looking at. And why isn't this a bonding proposal? Obviously, we're building infrastructure that typically falls into that category. I'm assuming you have a pretty good reason. I'd love to hear.
And who would like to take that one? If you just raise your hand, I'll know which one wants to take it, or if both of you would like to take that answer.
I'm not sure if you heard, Madam Chair. I don't mean to be rude, but I did wonder if Representative Sanstead could ask that question.
Excuse me.
I'm happy to, Madam Chair. I'm
sorry about that. Representative Sanstead.
Thank you for your question, Representative Heinzman. I think that there are many ways that you could go about doing this. I think with our surplus, that it is the cleanest, most straightforward, and least political way of getting something accomplished this session. That is my take on it. Last year, you heard me bring a bill before the committee, and this was last year. It was not part of the university's request. It was my own bill that I brought forth as a result of understanding the solutions that are coming out of this facility. And I still think it is so important that they are able to continue and expand on the work that they are doing, as the testifiers indicated and I have shared in the past. The work that is coming out of this is not just solutions and answers for the state of Minnesota, but really these are global solutions. I know that Finland and Germany have reached out to be in contact. And just to circle back to your question, the answer is, I think this is just the cleanest, least political, straightforward way of accomplishing the end goal.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Unfortunately, it does appear on the surface to be actually the most political path for this going forward. Bonding does take a lot of work, and I understand that might be something that might be desirable to avoid, but it does help to have a lot of eyes on infrastructure projects as they're coming through, and that's why the bonding committee does visit those sites, so that people can get a flavor for what is available in terms of an opportunity and the impact to a community. As it relates to that project. So I might take a different view of that, Representative, but that's okay. I do have a question for Mr. Weberg. He brought up thermally modified wood, and I own a number of products or machines, I should say, specifically relative to drying wood and kilns and so forth. So it sounds like an exciting area to be doing some experimentation, and I'm wondering if you could just, I know I'm picking one thing out of your presentation, but if I had to pick one thing, that would be it. How do we turn a tamarack into a usable board, I guess, is my question.
Mr. Weberg.
Well, Chair Bernardi, Representative Heitzman, what a great question, because that's exactly what we're doing. One of the things that NRI installed this past year at the Zach Sim Bog is treated tamarack walkway. It's taking tamarack, which is not a timber species typically, to your point, treating it, and I can go into the science, but everybody will shoot me here, but basically it ties the strings into knots so that it doesn't move very much, and the wood becomes much more dimensionally stable and reduces the amount of water it will absorb, so it lasts longer and it's more dimensionally stable. That's been installed, and you're welcome to walk on it anytime.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Follow-up would be...
Yeah, that would be great. I just want to let members know we have 5 more minutes on this bill, and then we will move on to our next bill. So go ahead, Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I appreciate the discretion. It's been difficult going forward in this process, and I hope that people recognize there's, an opportunity coming forward soon that we could maybe not be stuck in Zoom land. That would be great. I'm looking at some of the technology in my own field relative to discussion you mentioned. I can't repeat it back as eloquently as you did in terms of tying those fibers together somewhat to hold the board stable. Are we still just focusing on the drying process and moisture and such being used along with heat to do that? Or are there other ways that we can manipulate the wood in a way that it would stay, as you're suggesting, stable?
Mr. Weaver.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Heitzman, yes, we are exploring other ways to use that platform using, you know, the heat and the thermal modification in combination with other materials that might impart other properties to the material itself. Harder, what's the antimicrobial, other types of things, chemistry to the wood, in addition to just simply making it more dimensionally stable.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was it.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So thank you, Representative Hampstead, for bringing this forward. I actually have toured the facility in Duluth. It was really interesting and fascinating, and I love science. I was kind of geeking out. My question is, even though we've heard presentations in the past and I've toured there, I don't really understand the full budget of NRRI and where your funding comes from. Can you just give me a high-level overview quickly?
Mr. Weinberg.
Chair Bernardi, Representative O'Neill. Absolutely. I'll keep it very brief. It basically is in 4 parts. One part is what's called the state special that comes directly to NRI. It's legislative. A second is UMD, gives a small amount, which is hard funding. We have a PUF endowment fund that literally is there to pay for the Coleraine site, because we pay for that ourselves. We pay the everything, you know, heat, light, water, et cetera. So that really kind of affords that. And then the fourth is grants and contracts. Within that, we've got federal grants, state grants. We are getting some international money, but also the contracts that we have for service contracts for companies such as Representative Heitzman's, as well as corporations that hire us for help. I hope that was brief enough.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chair. I actually meant the total dollar of your annual budget.
I apologize.
In addition to that, Mr. Okay. Weinberg.
I apologize. Chair Bernardi, Representative O'Neill. In fiscal year 21, we had a dip. We went down to about 15 million. This year, for fiscal year 22, we're back in the saddle at about 18.5, and we're looking to be into the 20s in the following year. This is how we're trying to grow this. And the way we're growing it is in concert with Vice President of Research Oaks, looking for the opportunities across the federal government and leveraging partnerships, not only in this country, but abroad, as Representative Sandstead indicated as well.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a second follow-up?
Just a brief comment. So we're asking for $10 million when you have an annual budget of almost approaching 20. Right now it's 18.5. That's a little high of an ask considering your overall budget. I did not know that it was that small. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is from Mr. Weberg. So you have 19 labs in Duluth. Who has paid for the creation or construction of those labs?
Mr. Weberg.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and Representative Erickson. The laboratories in Duluth were paid for by legislative investment in the 80s. The building became available to use as a laboratory in the 85-86 timeframe. And that was consistent with in 1983 when the Institute itself was formed. Does that answer your question, ma'am?
Representative Erickson for the last question for today on this topic.
Yes, Mr. Weberg. So those labs are all older labs or very old labs. Is that correct?
That is correct. And essentially, they are not functioning the way they need to. We have people on fourth floor that are using two space heaters to stay warm in the winter. And fortunately, the Vice President of Research's office got us a new roof this year, so we no longer are worried about keeping tents over our equipment. So it's a fantastic building, but we have to put the money into renovating it and keeping it safe and useful for the research of tomorrow instead of the research of yesterday.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I see Representative Mecklen. If you would like to ask a quick question, I can call on you now. Thank you.
Question.
Not hearing you.
Not hearing me.
A little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. It's a little like bad internet. Michael Oakes made a mention that he received $1 billion last year, I believe, from outside sources. Where did all that money go for all of this implementation of research and development?
Vice President Oakes.
Yeah, Chair Bernardi, thank you. Thank you for the great question. Yes, we had $1 billion of awards and over $1 billion of expenditures. This goes to obviously salaries. It goes to paying the lights in the entire university system. It goes to all research activities. And we do invest, as Director Weberg just said, to the best extent we can, and such as a new roof for his facility. But the things he wants to do require new one-time, I want to emphasize, one-time investment money. And that's what we're talking about this afternoon. I hope that's helpful, sir.
Thank you very much. Okay, members, I'm going to go back to Representative Sandsted. Would you like to make closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill. I would just strongly encourage your support of this. Thank you.
Okay, hearing no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 3048 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Sandsted, and to all of our testifiers. So next on the agenda, we have House File 2752 from Representative Cleavorn. We have 30 minutes scheduled for this bill, and we will plan to wrap up around 3:55-ish. And we will move. So I will move that the House File 2752 be laid over for possible inclusion. We have before us House File 2752. Representative Cleavorn, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm here today to present House File 2752, requesting supplemental general fund financing to the University of Minnesota to increase access to higher education and to reduce costs to students. There are three subsections to the $65 million supplemental request. In subsection one, you will see a $30 million request to expand the system-wide promise program for students with financial need. The second, you will see a $30 million request to expand the Greater Minnesota Scholarship at the University of Minnesota to attract and retain students to the university's Crookston, Duluth, Morris, and Rochester campuses. And the third is a $5 million request to increase student academic advising, mental health and well-being, tutoring needs, and financial literacy supports. These services at the University of Minnesota are needed to meet the increasing student demand, to increase equity through strengthening supports for students with historically low retention and graduation rates, and to more proactively address issues that slow down students' progress towards degree completion. Madam Chair, with me today are testifiers who will speak to the need and details of this appropriation request. And Madam Chair, with that, I would ask you to recognize Vice Provost Bob McMaster. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Vice Provost McMaster. Please state your name for the record and please proceed. Oh, lots of P's in that introduction. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. My name is Robert McMaster, and I'm the current Vice Provost and Dean of Undergraduate Education at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today, and thank you to Representative Claiborne for your support of this legislation. As an institution, we're committed to providing financial support for students who are admitted but cannot afford to attend. Our philosophy is that no admitted student should be unable to attend because of financial constraints. In addition to federal grants such as Pell, the Minnesota State Grant Program, and philanthropic support, we have numerous system-wide scholarship and financial aid programs that are designed to help us meet this goal of affordability. The University of Minnesota Promise is one of those programs. The Promise program started in 2007 as the Founders Program and currently supports 13 to 14,000 Minnesota families annually with income levels at $120,000 or below, with a focus on low-income families. In the fall of 2021, we expanded this program called Promise Plus to ensure that students whose families earn less than $50,000 per year had their full tuition covered by a combination of federal, state, and university gift aid. We also recently created the Native American Promise Program that provides substantial support, financial support, in most cases free tuition, to first-year undergraduate students and transfer students from tribal colleges who are enrolled citizens in one of Minnesota's 11 federally recognized tribal nations. The U of M programs for low and middle income students, which provide up to $18,000 in gift aid per year, also support large percentages of first generation and BIPOC students. In fact, in the fall 2021 UMTC freshman class, nearly one third of the students who enrolled were BIPOC, in large part due to our financial support programs. The legislation before you today builds on the past work of our Promise programs with the ultimate goal to enhance affordability and to reduce student debt, which we know is a national problem. First, we are requesting $30 million to increase the amount of financial support in the base Promise program, providing students with an increase in financial aid from $1,100 to $2,100 per year, depending on a student's income level. This ensures that those students at lower income levels will receive even more financial aid than they currently do. Additionally, the funding would expand the program to a larger set of students. At the U of M, we have seen middle-income families continue to borrow higher amounts, with the highest level of debt coming from families with incomes in the range of $120,000 to $160,000. This population doesn't qualify for Pell or state grant funding and is not currently covered by our existing programs. Importantly, this legislative proposal would expand the Promise program to help meet the needs of those middle-income families in order to limit their borrowing. If this expansion is funded, more Minnesota families across the state will have financial support for college. 74% of Greater Minnesota families and 67% of Twin Cities Metro families would receive funding from a newly expanded Promise program. Approximately 5,800 BIPOC and 6,300 first-generation students would also be supported by the enhanced program. Madam Chair, we are also requesting an additional $30 million in recurring funding to establish a four-year scholarship for Minnesota high school graduates enrolling on any of the four Greater Minnesota campuses. The objective with the scholarship program is twofold. The first objective is to retain more Minnesota residents within the University of Minnesota system. A second objective is to increase enrollments on these greater Minnesota campuses, where such a scholarship program would unquestionably be a major recruitment strategy. The current model is for first-year enrolled students to receive a $4,000 or $5,000 award with another $1,000 or $2,000 award for years 2 through 4. Finally, we're requesting $5 million in recurring for student support throughout the entire university system. These funds will be used to enhance our understaffed mental health resources as the number of students needing these services grows rapidly. Additionally, we'll be increasing our advising, tutoring, and career counseling services, all of which lead to better retention, timely graduation, and overall student satisfaction at the U. These student support services assist our students in graduating on time, thereby helping them reduce student debt. In fact, since 2011, our high graduation rates have helped students save $35 million in expenses by ensuring that they finish in 4 years. In particular, our student support programs have helped to significantly increase the retention and graduation of our BIPOC students. So to summarize, Madam Chair, we are requesting $30 million to enhance and expand our base promise program, $30 million to create a greater Minnesota scholarship program, and $5 million for expanded student support. Thank you, and I'll now turn this over to my colleague, Jeffrey Ratliff Crane, to talk about more about the impact of the Greater Minnesota Scholarship Program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Vice Provost McMaster. And welcome to the committee, Vice Chancellor Ratcliffe Crane. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Bernardi, members of the Higher Education Committee, thank you. My name is Jeffrey Ratliff Crane. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs and Innovation at the University of Minnesota Rochester. Building on what Professor McMaster had noted, I've been with the University of Minnesota since 1989, first as a professor of psychology on the Morris campus, and now as an administrator at UMR, a role that I assumed in 2018. So a lot of history with our greater Minnesota campuses. The University of Minnesota system is unique. The five campuses which make up the U of M not only connect geographically with different regions of Minnesota, but as the committee heard on February 16 from university students, each campus offers a distinct experience, serving the distinct needs of our state, our students, and surrounding communities. At UMR, the U of M's newest campus, which opened our doors in 2009 to just 52 trailblazers at that time, students come to Rochester often with aspirations to make a difference in healthcare. Drawn by the dynamic healthcare ecosystem that Rochester has to offer, UMR students see themselves as the next generation of Minnesota's healthcare professionals. Among those UMR students who are passionate about health, science, and medicine, 83% come from Minnesota. Roughly half of those coming out of the Twin Cities metro area, and the other half from greater Minnesota. What's more, nearly 70% of UMR's student body is from traditionally underrepresented backgrounds, traditionally underrepresented backgrounds in higher ed. So either BIPOC, first generation, and or Pell eligible. In fact, this past fall's incoming class was 42% students of color, 47% first-generation college students, and nearly 35% were Pell eligible. House File 2752 is an investment in University of Minnesota students, and therefore really an investment in Minnesota, my point of view. The Greater Minnesota Scholarship Program will attract and retain students not only on the UMR campus, but the campuses of Crookston, Duluth, and Morris as well. This new scholarship program will help reduce financial barriers and burdens Minnesota students and their families face when determining which campuses and programs align with their academic dreams and their career aspirations. Quite pointedly, the financial barriers to attending the U of M campuses are of great concern. For greater Minnesota campuses like UMR, we are especially vulnerable to competition from neighboring states, as well as being outmatched by private colleges in the size and scope of their available scholarships. Expanding access to Minnesota's unique and innovative higher education to all students, where campuses have demonstrated truly high success with students who are first in their families to attend college, is a goal that we all share. Although designed for all Minnesotans, the Greater Minnesota Scholarship Program is expected to increase the number of students from Greater Minnesota attending the University of Minnesota, a long-term system enrollment management objective that we have. With this additional program, we expect to strengthen Greater Minnesota through student and faculty involvement in communities, and upon graduation, keeping our alumni in Greater Minnesota through the connections, opportunities, and sense of belonging that occurs while they were while a student. The Greater Minnesota Scholarship Program, when fully phased in, we anticipate will support between 8,500 to 9,500 students based on current enrollment levels and with some allowance for growth to higher enrollment levels in the future. This is a significant boost for each of these campuses and for a significant number of students and their families. Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members. I will now turn it over to Abdulaziz Mohammed, a student from the university's Twin Cities campus, to conclude our presentation.
Thank you very much. And welcome to the committee, Mr. Mohammed. Please state your name for the record and please proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, and members of the committee. My name is Abdulaziz Mohammed. My pronouns are he, him, his. And I serve as the undergraduate student body president at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, representing over 35,000 plus undergraduate students. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on the university's $65 million student services request. In the Minnesota Student Association Student Government 2021 Fall Survey, 64% of undergraduate students said they were often worried about how they'd be able to pay for tuition. We know Minnesota students need financial support for higher education. Tuition, fees, and other costs of attendance have become burdensome for those seeking a high-quality degree. Building off of its existing financial aid infrastructure, the University of Minnesota is looking to tackle that systemic problem through a comprehensive proposal that reduces the cost of attendance for Minnesota residents and increases access to the university. One of my favorite parts of the proposal is a $5 million investment to expand support services like mental health counseling, financial literacy, and academic advising. The COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted the importance of student support services and the gaps in how higher education institutions are meeting the needs of students. By investing in this area, the university is helping meet the growing demand by students for support services and ensuring their academic success. Other parts of the proposal, such as the investment in the Popular U Promise program, are designed to increase financial aid for students in lower income brackets, while also expanding the program to more families. This is a game changer because the cost of attendance in higher education is an equity issue, and it's important to reduce the barriers of entry. Ensuring opportunities for university students through affordability and completion is a top priority for student advocates like myself, and the proposal does just that. Therefore, I urge the committee and state legislators to fund the requests and prioritize the needs of students fully. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify, and I look forward to answering any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mohammed, for presenting today. I see Representative O'Neill has a question. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, are we at the end of the presentation or is there more? I don't have an annotated agenda, so I wasn't sure.
No, we are at the end of the presentation until Representative Cleavorn does her summary remarks after member questions. So
wonderful. I thought we were close to the end, but I wasn't sure. So thank you for the presentation. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for the bill. Thank you for the student to come and testify. I appreciate all of that very much. I'm happy that this is not a $250 million ask, as the University of Minnesota had come with their first ask with $75 million in each year of the biennium in the tails. This is, at least they dropped it down to $65 million, but this is in the tails. So this is not just a one-time appropriation, like the Mid-State system came to us, they asked for $60 million one time, but this is actually $65 million this year of the biennium and added to the tail. So that is a significant cost going forward. So we're going all the way up to $685 million of each year of the biennium moving forward instead of $620. So it's a pretty big jump in the tails. It would be one thing if this was just one-time appropriation, but that is not what they're asking for. So the University of Minnesota now, instead of going their first ask, $250 million of supplemental budget with $75 million in each year of the tails. Now it's down to just $65 million, but still in the tails. So I have a problem with that. I also have a concern. So there was, in this bill, there's talk about needing to recruit new students, in particular Greater Minnesota, Crookston, Morris, Duluth, and so on, and Rochester, which I think is a great idea. But the thing about the University of Minnesota is that they can bring in more students if they want to. It's not the Mid-State system where they take whoever comes in the door, but there's requirements to come into the Mid-State system. And I know that they've made some adjustments to that and they've seen an increase in students because they wanted it. And so I'm not sure exactly what the $30 million is for. I actually had a very, very long conversation last night, with a student who desperately wants to go back to the University of Minnesota Duluth program. And so his name is Lucius and he lives in Delano. He has been desperately trying to go back, but he is barred from continuing and finishing his engineering program because of a vaccine mandate. And he just wants to do online. So he can't even sit in his own apartment doing online classes with the University of Minnesota Duluth to finish his engineering degree because he refuses to take the vaccine, which is his choice to do. So if the University of Minnesota wants to encourage and invite new students in, that's certainly a policy that they could revisit. I don't really find the science behind having a vaccine mandate or someone sitting at home doing online classes. So there's an option, you could do that instead. I know that this person, Lucius, has tried to talk to the regents multiple times, and he's a couple of them will talk to him, but the vast majority of the regents will not. So unfortunately, Svigum, Powell, Hipscht, Verhalen, and others will not actually talk to him. So that's problematic because he can't actually tell them what his concerns are. In any case, I still have an issue. This is still a big ask. This is still adding money to the tails, adding $65 million every year of the biennium going forward. We still have the issue of the mid-contract negotiation of the president's salary to bring it all the way up to $1.2 million. We still have the issue of three men's sports teams being cut to save money, which really was less than $2 million of savings. But you lost all those amazing young men who could have filled your seats, but you chose to cut those three men's sports teams. And I've met several of those young men, and they are just amazing human beings. So I'm not really sure why we did that. We also, the university also cut 40 women's positions. So there's another opportunity that was lost. You could have done that. So there's lots and lots of options here short of a $65 million ask in the tails. So appropriation going forward. I have a number of concerns, and all I can say is at least it's not $250 million. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Cleveland, for bringing this bill forward. It's much needed. This is a time that we need to be investing into the future of our state. And this is the appropriate way of making sure that we have more individuals who are ready to acquire higher education. And I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. In fact, we should be increasing. I think this is a small ask compared to how much we have today and how much we have to invest in our state. One quick question I just wanted to ask is, The Promise Program and some of the scholarship program, are they based on 120,000 income for a household, or are they, is it based on area median income? That's a quick question that I have. I just wanted to get a clarity on that.
Vice Provost McMaster.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Knorr. The Promise Program goes up to 120,000 at the upper end. So for Promise, the majority of the money is distributed for low income and lower middle income students. Students at the upper end at 120,000 family income get about $400, not a great deal. So it's kind of a range from what we call zero EFC, zero expected family contribution, very low income students up to that 120. Thank you.
Representative Doherty, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chair. You know, I'm looking at the area median income going up. You know, if you look at the metro state, actually Minneapolis area, it's going to be 100% is 105,000 approximately, if not more, as we go into this year. Will there be a way to increase the bracket so that we can capture more individuals who are struggling because of some of the changes in the economy, whereby there's inflation involved and so many other things, and we want to make sure that we are more inclusive, and those who are in the middle income, who are in between on the poverty guidelines, and all those who are above, we can capture them all. Is there a plan to increase the size so that we can bring more people?
Vice Provost McMaster.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Knorr. The way this would work is we've computed the median family income for Minnesota recently at about 80,000. And so the upper end, the new upper end of Promise would be twice that, the 160,000 that we mentioned. As we look at the new scale we've created, to your point, it will be biased a bit towards the middle income ranges where we know students are borrowing the most. So we're going to continue to support students at the lower end. They'll get a bump in the Promise. It will get an even larger amount as we go into the middle income, and then lesser amounts at the upper income. So I think the models we've created will address your concern at both your concerns about raising the limit and then also focusing on middle income students. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I see no further questions. Representative Albright, okay, before the last question, I see your hands up. Go ahead, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Vice Provost McMaster, I'm looking at this ask in this bill, and I think some of the issues that were raised by the ranking member, I won't go over, but it seems to me that there's a bit of a tone deafness here on the part of the University of Minnesota when you're asking for additional money, but yet you also raised tuition not too long ago. And so help me understand how in the last one is to increase access and pare back the debt. You're speaking out of both sides of your mouth when you're raising the fees and the costs for attending the University of Minnesota. And then you're turning around and asking for the state of Minnesota to fund some of those requests, all the while you are a chartered institution, a land-grant institution. And so the University of Minnesota, to some respect, without, you know, our involvement over the regent selection process, you can act with not impunity, but without, you know, any real accountability for the actions other than our approval of your budget. And so help me understand how those two diametrically opposed facts work together to promote a better optics and perception going forward for the University of Minnesota, not only from the state legislature, but from people looking in the paper and seeing some of the things that have been said, and all the while you're asking for more money when it would be perceived that your own financial due diligence or fiduciary responsibility from their perspective has not been addressed.
Vice Provost McMaster.
Madam Chair and Representative Albright. I'm going to have to be somewhat careful here in that I don't set tuition rates for the university. That's not part of my job. And so that is a set of budgetary officers to do that. I will say this. If you look over the last 10 years, the increases in tuition at the university have been very low. 1%, 0%. We have tried very hard to control tuition rates at the University of Minnesota over the last decade. If you also look at the amount of scholarship dollars that we've raised to try to help our students, that is a number that's gone up at a much higher rate than the tuition increases. So I think you would see our strategy here of controlling tuition increases, but then raising as much money as possible through philanthropy and these programs that I described to help our students.
Representative Albright, I see your hand is down.
I do have a follow on to what the Vice Provost just said when we're talking about philanthropic fundraising. But yet when I talk to the folks over at the University of Minnesota and they talk about the funding for the trust and others that has been raised, they always throw up the shield that, well, it's for dedicated purposes that, you know, the donor has made upon those contributions. So help me understand how those kinds of comments square with what you just said about working very hard to find scholarship dollars to reduce the costs for students coming in.
Vice Provost McMaster.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Albright. If you look at the funds that have been raised by the foundation for scholarships, we have a large number and amount of scholarship dollars that have come in for all university scholarships. They're not restricted. They can be used for any student in any college. And in fact, that's been one of the major goals in terms of a new U-wide scholarship program, is to bring in funds that aren't restricted and in fact can be used across the board to help all students at the university. And I can go into lots of details here, but I won't. But we've been very successful in creating those types of scholarship programs that have made the university much more affordable for hundreds or thousands of students. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so now I see Representative Mecklen has raised his hand. We'll take his question to be our last question, and then we will have Representative Cleavorn give closing remarks. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Chair. So I guess my question would be, as I listen to all this, what is the cost gone up in the last 20 years for tuition percentage-wise compared to the increase of salaries for both staff and admin? Is there a correlation between the two? Can maybe the provost answer that question?
Vice Provost McMaster.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Mecklen. I'm sorry I cannot answer that question. I don't have that knowledge. Again, that would be more our financial experts at the university would have to answer the increases that you're asking about.
Representative Mecklen, do you have a quick follow-up?
I guess the quick follow-up would be I would like to see if they can get back to us on that to see the percentage of difference. That would be really helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So now, Representative Cleavorn, if you'd like to make some closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I thank you for the time that you've given us today. I'd like to take just a moment to thank the testifiers for being here today and to represent the needs of the students. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm just going to ask that you renew your motion to please hold this bill over for possible inclusion in the committee's supplemental finance bill. Thank you.
Okay. I will, hearing no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 2752 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Thank you, testifiers and Representative Cleavorn. Now we're moving to our last agenda item. We have House File 1101 before us from Representative Bonner. We have our last 30 minutes scheduled for this bill, and we plan to wrap up vote at 4:25. I will move that House File 1101 be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. we have before us, House File 1101, Representative Bonner has an author's amendment labeled A1. I will move that the A1 amendment to put the bill in the form that the author wants. Does everyone have the amendment? Okay, Representative Bonner, can you tell us briefly what the amendment does? And welcome to the committee, Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, the A1 amendment is a compromise that actually makes sure that we are adequately making sure that we serve both missions under this new bill. So it dedicates $1.75 billion of the bonding authority held by MHEFA to its primary mission, which is higher education, and 2.25 to what would be its new mission if approved under this bill, which is specifically for healthcare organizations and senior living facilities. So basically sort of compartmentalizes the amount for each of those to ensure that there are sufficient resources on both sides.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, Representative Albright.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I'm having my mouse isn't moving fast enough on the screen. A question for the author of the bill in terms of, or actually for you, Madam Chair, your referral motion would be to where I understand, my presence on the Health and Human Services bill, and we're talking about healthcare organizations, that type of thing. Where is this bill traveling next?
It's moving to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't hear that. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Bonner, please present your bill to the committee.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the time to come before you today. I would like to introduce you to one of the state's best kept secrets, the MHEFA, or the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Foundation. In existence for over 50 years, their mission is to help shepherd, ensure success, and fund worthy projects using their tax-exempt bonding authority for capital projects. This work expands options for non-government or nonprofit entities in the areas of higher education. Their fees are lower than allowed by the IRS and represent a solid value to fund worthy projects that have a broader public benefit. They have a proven track record of success borne out over decades of experience. This agency takes its authority from the state, but is fully self-funded, meaning all costs for the administration and staffing are paid out of the fees generated by their work, and there is no, I repeat, no cost to the state. The agency is overseen by a board appointed by the governor and with the consent of the Senate. They run a tight ship with two paid staff and billions of dollars worth of successfully executed projects. While this agency has toiled away doing great work over the years, in more recent years, they were approached to use their vast experience for healthcare and senior living projects. While they did not entertain the projects that were outside of their scope, they realized that there was an ever-growing need to put their talents to use in projects like their original scope that go well beyond basic capital and bring projects that meet the greater public good. That brings us here today. So here's what the bill does. First, it changes the name of the organization from the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority to the Minnesota Health and Education Facilities Authority to reflect the newly expanded authority. Second, it expands the scope of the agency to include the ability to finance healthcare and senior living facilities and adds one board member specializing in healthcare. Third, it increases the amount of financing authority allowed by the agency from $1.3 billion to $4 billion to cover this new dual mission. Lastly, the amendment that we approved today clarified and or specified that $1.7 billion would continue to meet the mission of the Agency for Higher Education Projects, protecting its original mission, and specifying $2.25 billion to address the expanded demand of the additional scope for nonprofit healthcare and senior living facilities. In essence, MHEFA is here today to ask the legislature for permission to apply their extensive skills and low-cost capital bonding authority to meet an increasing need within our communities. Members, I ask for your support. Please find a full set of benefit summaries, letters of support representing both aspects of the new scope and the old, and a fiscal note showing no cost to the state. With me here today, I have Barry Fick of MHEFA to testify on behalf of the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Barry Fick. Please introduce yourself and your organization and proceed with your testimony. And you are on mute. We'll get the hang of this pretty soon. It's, you know, there a couple years, maybe another third year, maybe. No, hopefully not.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for entertaining our discussion this afternoon. My name is Barry Fick. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority. I've been in this position for about 5.5 years now. And prior to that, I worked with Minnesota schools and healthcare organizations as a financial consultant. So I have a substantial amount of experience in this area. What we are proposing is to help ensure the efficiency of both Minnesota healthcare financing and Minnesota higher ed financing for the next 50 years, we hope. As Representative Bonner noted, we have a strong history of reaching back throughout since the mid-70s or early 70s, and we do take no state support. In fact, our legislation specifically requires us to provide our own support, and the legislature also legislation also specifically says that any bonds we issue are not supported by the state in any way, shape, or form, either through provision of tax money or making grants to the authority. So we're completely independent from a financial perspective. We currently have approximately $1 billion of assets or debt outstanding, and we anticipate another $200 to $250 million will be issued prior to the end of the fiscal year in June of 2022. And what we have been, as Representative Bonner noted, is we've been received requests over the past number of years to provide assistance to healthcare and senior living organizations. And since we haven't been able to do that, we thought we would help those entities by expanding our legislative authority to do that. We anticipate that because the areas of healthcare and senior living financing are very similar to higher education, and we have, in at least from my perspective, we have the experience to handle that capacity going forward. This would be a benefit for both healthcare and for higher education in particular. We've worked closely with the Minnesota Private College Council to make sure that whatever we are doing would not diminish our commitment or capacity to help the existing not-for-profit higher education borrowers that we work with. And we have the capacity to expand to help the other healthcare folks. In particular, our benefit would be able to provide institutions in greater Minnesota with the ability to do smaller projects. And overall, if we're able to increase the amount of outstanding debt that we have, we would be able to keep our fees extremely low, and if not, reduce our overall fees that we charge to borrowers, because we anticipate that we would need to require to add additional staff person when we ramp up to this authority. We would still be able to provide very cost-effective services and are extremely efficient in what we do. So we think this is a great opportunity for the states to expand the ability to help at no cost to the state, healthcare, higher education, and senior living all at the same time. And we think it would be a very good option. In addition, we think that it would help substantiate or support the ability of the Higher Ed Facilities Authority to continue to attract great talent in the future and provide an opportunity for people to continue their education and receive quality healthcare services and senior living services at the same time. So I'd be pleased to respond to any questions or comments that committee members might have.
Thank you, Mr. Fink. I also want to add that we don't have any further public testifiers listed, but I will note that we had some written testimony that was shared with the members in their packet, so to speak, and is available on the committee website. I see Representative Cleburne has a question. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to go on the record to say I would be happy to speak with Representative Bonner about this bill later, but I know it's going on to Health and Human Services. I don't see major problems with it in the higher ed space, but I would like to just make her aware that I'd like to have further conversation with her about this bill. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Fick, thank you for the presentation. A couple of questions for you. You mentioned that you are the sole determinant factor in terms of screening for the projects that you appropriate funding for. So is it the facility of the MHEFA to screen those projects and then facilitate the letting of the bonds, which would be from the state of Minnesota? And the statement that it costs the state nothing is presumptive on the fact that it's a pass-through and the fees collected go to pay down the outstanding debt. Would that be correct?
Mr. Fick.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, committee members, the analysis is substantially correct. I would just add a couple of clarification comments for it. Number one, the determinant of the viability of the projects which we financed is really done by a group of professionals. We retain legal counsel, we retain municipal advisory counsel, and we retained the borrower comes to us with either a commercial bank or an investment bank that has looked at their project as well. We prepare and have prepared for us reports that are then given to our board, and the board makes the ultimate decision as to whether we should proceed with the project. Once that approval has been obtained, we turn around and work with everyone to issue the bonds under the name of the authority. We take the proceeds from the bonds, loan them to the borrower, and then receive an obligation from the borrower to repay us at the same rates and terms as we issue the bonds at. So then that is how the bonds are repaid to ultimate investors. And so we receive no compensation from the bondholders, and we, like I said, the bonds are issued at no cost to the state because any operational costs we have are funded by a fee that we charge to all the entities who borrow and issue debt through us.
Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Fick, then, so I guess the understanding is that they are then assigning the collateral for the building or the entity to your agency until that debt is repaid, correct?
That is correct, yes, sir.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Mr. Fick, and this is more of a commentary than anything, Madam Chair, but you in your testimony gave point to the fact that your original scope of your authority was to assist in the promotion of loans to those that would be seeking advancement through, you know, higher educational facilities and curriculum, and you've been approached, by those entities, maybe similarly asking for assistance in either healthcare facilities and or senior living facilities, and it's eerily reminiscent, Madam Chair and Mr. Fick, and I mean no disparaging against your agency. 50 years ago, another entity had a very limited scope, But over time, that mission creep or the scope of that organization lent itself to such additional responsibilities as busing to the advancement of housing, of urban redevelopment, and to planned development. And I speak of the Met Council. Their original scope was diametrically different than what it is today. And I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share or to speak to the fact that you're asking for not only an expansion of your issuance, your bond issuant limitation. Well, I think that's, you know, certainly admirable. What I find more troublesome is that you're asking for an increase or an expansion of your scope. And to the point that literally your organization is only accountable to one person, and that is the governor, who appoints your board, much like the Met Council. And so I would ask that, you know, this committee think on and ponder those issues as we move this bill forward. I have no problem with the integrity of your agency, but the scope that you are asking this body to expand it by is very troubling for the virtue of what we have seen in other state agencies where they have asked for an expansion of scope to help people. And the legislature abdicates its responsibility by giving that away. So I will leave it at that. And if Mr. Fick has a response, I'm certainly willing to hear and listen to it. But for the committee members, I think we need to proceed with caution on this one. I know it's been a venerable organization, but we have a number of venerable organizations that are asking for an expansion of scope. And I think when we accede to that, we lose some of the responsibility as well as the accountability to those organizations. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Fick.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Albright, members of the committee, I think that one significant distinction between our scope of operations and the scope of other operations, Met Council and others, would be that we are limited to only assisting with financing capital projects. We don't get involved with operations. We don't get involved with the expanding their services other than if they want to do a capital project. And in addition, for each project that we do, there is a requirement under federal law that we have a public hearing where people who are concerned or have questions about an individual project can come before us to talk about the bonding of that. So our function is really, I think, more limited than other agencies to which you reference in that we are only able to do financing and no more than that.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Mr. Fick. All right, member, are there any other questions or discussion? Seeing none, I will ask Representative Bonner if she'd like to make any closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You know, again, I want to mention that this agency has been toiling away doing this work for over 50 years with a very, very limited, very specific scope. They are asking here today to be able to expand their authority to cover an area that is truly needed within our communities. They have the knowledge and the expertise to do so, but have not actually asked for that authority for some time, simply because it wasn't within their scope. But as the need has increased and requests have increased, they began to take a critical eye at whether or not they actually could use their expertise to fill this really essential need. And that is why they are here before us. And I will tell you one of the things that I have learned from speaking with Mr. Fick over some time now is that they are a very conservative organization. They take their authority and their responsibilities very seriously. And they did not take upon this decision lightly to come before us to request this authority. However, I do think that it is something that meets an essential need. And again, I want to remind members that the ability to do this capital bonding is in fact very limited in its scope and authority. And there are no plans that I am aware of to expand beyond that. So I thank all of you for your time today and appreciate the hard work that the MHEFA has done on behalf of Minnesotans in higher education, and I hope that you will see fit to give them the authority to do so for healthcare as well.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Hearing no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 1101, as amended, be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The CLA will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Vice Chair Christensen. Vice Chair Christensen. Representative O'Neill.
I'm here. Aye.
Christensen, aye. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Albright.
Albright, no.
Albright, nay. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, aye.
Daniels, aye. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, aye.
Erickson, aye. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Heintzeman.
Aye.
Heintzeman, aye. Representative Howard.
Howard, aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick, nay. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Meckland. Representative Meckland, if you could repeat.
I said, Meckland says no.
Meckland, nay.
No.
Representative Noor.
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Sandell.
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Sandsted.
Aye.
Sandsted, aye. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Thompson. Madam Chair, with 15 ayes, two nays, we have 15 ayes, two nays, and two abstentions.
There being 15 ayes, two nays, and two abstentions, the motion passes and the House File 1101, as amended, is referred to Health, Finance, and Policy. I want to thank all of our testifiers today, and obviously to our members as normal. We sometimes don't thank you for all your work and want to thank you for your work as well, and our staff. So with that, we are meeting Wednesday, March 2nd again, and the meeting is adjourned.